Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Education Report and the Making of a Nation, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome back to As It Is, the program that helps you improve your American English and learn about our world at the same time. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we have two stories for you. The first is about free speech and a special movie. Then, new research about video games for young people. Are they a waste of time, or are there benefits that we have overlooked? Let's get started with part one. The documentary film, To Singapore with Love, tells about political dissidents from Singapore. The official website says the film explores the stories of nine people who left Singapore between the 1960s and 1980s. It says they fled to escape persecution by the government. First, from Singapore's British colonial rulers, and later by the Singapore government. The 70-minute-long film has been shown at public events in Britain, India, and Malaysia, among other countries. But one place the movie cannot be seen is Singapore itself. That is because the government there banned public screenings of the film. As we hear from Bob Doty, the ban raises questions about free speech, not only for Singapore, but also for a famous university in the United States.
Yale University was planning to show the film at its partner school in Singapore. Yale and the National University of Singapore opened a partner institution in 2013. Yale officials plan to show the documentary at the Yale-NUS college campus, until the government banned the film. Critics say the partnership with the National University has damaged the American university's image for academic freedom. Jim Sleeper teaches political science at Yale University. He wrote an article for the Huffington Post website in reaction to the ban. He noted that Singapore's Prime Minister and his party have a long record of blocking freedoms of expression they want to block and to permit whatever they decide to permit in this rich little city-state. Singapore's Media Development Authority has defended its decision to ban the film. Officials said the contents of the film undermine national security because legitimate actions of the security agencies are shown in a distorted way. The film's director, Tan Pin Pin, has asked the Media Development Authority to lift the ban. Ms. Pin Pin told VOA in an email that she has not agreed to any private screenings of the film in Singapore because the film is under appeal. She also sent a link to a local blog writer's story explaining the decision not to hold private screenings. In the blog story, the writer said that such screenings would reduce public pressure on the Media Development Authority to lift the ban on the film. If people could watch it at their school or with friends, they'll be less invested in making sure it's available to the public, the author wrote. Singapore has one of the highest gross domestic product levels per person in the world. Because of this economic success, some Singaporeans say they accept government restrictions as a trade-off to economic stability. Shane Teng is a data analyst in Singapore. He told VOA that sometimes Singaporeans are more interested in making money than concerning themselves with civil rights issues, such as government censorship. There's a saying in Singapore, "We are all busy making money." For people concerned with civil rights, they must have a lot of free time. Mr. Tang says he is interested in watching To Singapore with Love, but also does not want to create unwanted attention by the government. Yale NUS refused VOA's request for an interview, but said in a statement it will not show the film until Ms. Pinpin agrees to a screening.
You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. A study by researchers at Oxford University has found that playing video games can be good for children. Christopher Cruz reports the study found that children and teenagers who play the games for less than an hour a day show good behaviors in school and life.
The researchers asked almost 5,000 people between the ages of 10 and 15 in Britain how much time they spent playing video games. They also asked them how happy they were and whether they have good relations with their friends and other students. The researchers found that young people who spend less than one-third of their time away from school playing video games had the highest levels of happiness. The researchers compared them to two other groups, those who didn't play games at all, and those who spent 3 hours or more a day playing them. The study was published in the journal Pediatrics. It suggests that the influence on a child's life of video games, whether good or bad, was not nearly as great as the effect of family members, friendships, or poverty. Another study on the effect of video games was performed by researchers at Dartmouth College in 2012. It was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. The researchers say they found that teenagers who play violent video games that give rewards for taking risk are more likely to take high risks in their lives. Previous studies have linked these games to increased aggressiveness in young teens. This study, however, is the first to show that video games do more than increase aggression. It links some games to the use by teens of alcohol and illegal drugs, to risky driving, and unsafe sexual behaviors. The study lasted 4 years. Researchers asked more than 5,000 American teenagers questions about their experiences with games that have aggressive characters. Among those games is Grand Theft Auto. The researchers found that playing these kinds of games appeared to affect how the teens thought of themselves. They said the games appear to make the teenagers rebel and take part in possibly dangerous activities. Experts estimate people will spend more than $100 billion on video game activities worldwide by 2017. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America.
The Education Report is next, followed by The Making of a Nation. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Ebola has struck hard in Sierra Leone. More than 1 million children have been unable to attend school because of the continuing crisis caused by the disease. But classes are now broadcast on 41 radio stations and the country's only television station. The educational programs are airing 3 hours daily, 5 days a week. In the country's capital, Freetown, 17-year-old student Doris Ansumana says radio broadcasts make a big change from her usual days at school. She says life has become boring, not interesting. She misses the social life involved in going to school and seeing other students. Still, she says so far she is enjoying the radio lessons. She notes, however, that others do not have the chance to study because they must work. Her guardian, Yabonet Sese, also expresses concern about other young students because many are being forced into labor instead of study. Ms. Sese says some students are selling things because they do not have money. She says she watches Doris carefully to make sure she does her schoolwork. Doris's guardian suggests that the government extend broadcasts to night hours. She says everyone stays home at night. Brima Michael Ture serves as deputy director for the Ministry of Education, Science, and Technology. He says the goal is to have the broadcasts take place from 11 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon. He says the ministry worked hard to get teachers' opinions and advice for the broadcasts. Mr. Ture says 30 have been called to help put together the broadcasts. All are qualified to teach at different levels. Subjects include mathematics, science, and English. Mr. Ture says parents must understand that the ministry cannot continually monitor their children. The Sierra Leone Association of Journalists and the Independent Radio Network are directing the broadcasts. Several international partners, including UNICEF, are also working with the ministry. The broadcasts teach and comfort. They tell children that they are not alone in the Ebola crisis. Mr. Ture says the broadcasts also advise children on how to protect themselves and others. The Education, Science, and Technology Ministry will continue to present more programs. It also plans to bring solar-powered radio to areas of Sierra Leone without electricity. And that's the VOA Learning English Education Report. I'm Katie Weaver.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Two summers had gone by since the start of the American Civil War, and the North had not yet won a major battle in Virginia. The Army of the Potomac, the strongest of the Union armies, had tried to seize Richmond, the Confederate capital. General George McClellan moved the army up to the very gates of the city. But then, General Robert E. Lee led his Southern forces in a fierce attack. It smashed McClellan's army and drove them away from Richmond. This week in our series, Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles continue the story of the Civil War.
President Abraham Lincoln and his new Chief General Henry Halleck put together a new Northern force. They called it the Army of Virginia. They gave command of it to General John Pope, a successful fighter in the West. Pope began to move south toward Richmond. Halleck ordered McClellan to bring his army up to join Pope. Together, they could smash through the Confederate defenses around Richmond. Lee decided to hit Pope before McClellan could join him. He left a few thousand troops to guard Richmond, then took the rest north. Lee moved up to the Rappahannock River, across from Pope's army.
Lee sent Stonewall Jackson with 24,000 men on a quick march around the western end of Pope's lines. Jackson and his men marched more than 80 kilometers in 2 days. They got behind Pope and seized a huge northern supply center at Manassas. Pope moved to smash them. They burned the captured supplies. Then they moved a few kilometers away to a long, low hill just northwest of the Bull Run battleground, where Southern forces defeated a Northern army a year before. Jackson hid his troops in woods along the hill and waited for General Lee to arrive with the rest of the Southern army.
But before Lee could get there, Union troops, thousands of them, marched down the road below Jackson. Jackson decided to attack, to hold them there until Lee arrived with help. The fighting was furious. Neither side broke. The fighting died down at the end of the day, and Jackson's men moved back to their positions on higher ground. They made their lines along a partly built railroad on the side of the hill.
From his headquarters on the hill, Jackson watched the Northern forces prepare for battle. Many thousands of the enemy were marching into position. Pope brought up all his soldiers, and others were on the way from bases near Washington. Several thousand of McClellan's troops, commanded by General Porter, were arriving from the south. It was a mighty force, much larger than Jackson's army. Jackson was worried. He sent an officer back to find General Lee. He sent a message. Lee must hurry. Jackson faced a big army.
Pope's army was large, but it was poorly organized. The men had been rushed into position. The order to attack was given before all the troops were ready. So, the attack began slowly, and Jackson was able to fight it off. But then, more and more Northern soldiers joined the fight. The two sides struggled for hours in the hot summer sun. Jackson's men almost broke. Men prayed for the long day to end. The sun seemed to stand still.
Finally, the sun went down, and the battlefield became dark. Jackson's men had held, but they paid a terrible price. Thousands were killed or wounded. Northern losses were even greater. Most of the Union troops had fought bravely. They had hit the Confederate lines time after time. But one large group of soldiers did not get into the battle at all that day. This was the group from McClellan's Army of the Potomac, led by Fitz John Porter. Pope had ordered Porter to strike at the right end of Jackson's lines. Porter took his troops several kilometers past Jackson's right and stopped them. His soldiers remained there all day, out of the battle. Porter said later he believed the Confederate forces were too strong for his men.
Other groups of McClellan's men were arriving in Alexandria, 30 kilometers to the east. Pope asked that they be sent to help him. McClellan was ordered to send them immediately, but he refused to do so. He said they were not in condition to fight, and he would not send them. General Pope still thought he was facing only Jackson's army. He refused to believe reports that Lee had arrived on the battlefield with 30,000 more Southern soldiers. Pope thought Lee was still far to the west of Manassas.
Pope knew that Jackson's army had taken a terrible beating in the 2 days of bloody fighting, and he was sure that Jackson would try to withdraw the next day to retreat to the west. Pope divided his forces that night. He left thousands in place in front of Jackson's lines. The others were moved back. They were ordered to get ready for a march west to block Jackson's retreat. Pope made a terrible mistake. Jackson was not planning to retreat. He was waiting with Lee to smash the Northern Army. And that is what happened the next day.
Northern troops attacked Jackson's lines. The fighting was bitter. Pope's forces almost smashed through. But then Lee ordered his men to move forward to help Jackson. Confederate artillery broke up the Northern attack. When the Northern troops began to retreat, Lee and Jackson attacked with all their might. Many of Pope's men were not prepared for battle. They were standing together in groups, ready for marching. They could not stop the Southern attack. The Confederates pushed Pope's army back across the old Bull Run battlefield.
Near the end of the day, Northern forces succeeded in organizing a stronger defensive line. The Southern attack slowed down, then stopped. Lee sent Jackson around the north end of Pope's line to try to stop the Northern retreat. Lee did not want the defeated Union Army to escape. He wanted to destroy it. But heavy rain held up Jackson's troops. They were discovered and attacked by a strong northern force. Jackson could move no farther. He could not stop Pope's retreat to Centerville and Washington. The Northern Army escaped.
But it left behind thousands and thousands of dead and wounded. Confederate doctors treated their own men, then tried to help the wounded soldiers of the other side. General Lee permitted Northern medical wagons to return to the battlefield, and they began to carry the wounded back to Centerville. Groups of McClellan's army arriving from Alexandria met Pope's men in Centerville. They laughed and shouted at the tired, beaten soldiers. Many said they were glad that Pope had lost. One of McClellan's generals, Samuel Sturgis, greeted Pope at Centerville. "I always told you, Pope, that if they gave you enough rope, you would hang yourself."
What happened at Bull Run created bitter anger among the people of the North, anger against their military leaders. People felt that a year had been wasted, that thousands had died for no real purpose. The year before, Southern troops sent a Northern army fleeing from Bull Run. Now it was happening again. The Army of the Potomac was back where it started. As the facts of the battle became known, cries of anger became even louder. The people demanded answers. Why did McClellan and his men move so slowly? Why did they refuse to go to Pope's aid? Why did Pope let Jackson get behind him? Why were 14,000 soldiers lost?
Most members of Lincoln's cabinet believed McClellan was responsible. Treasury Secretary Chase said McClellan should be shot. War Secretary Stanton said he should be dismissed immediately. He and three other cabinet members signed a note demanding that Lincoln remove McClellan as commander of the Army of the Potomac. Lincoln agreed that what McClellan had done was shocking. He said it was clear that McClellan wanted Pope to fail. But Lincoln said he would not remove McClellan. He said he knew that McClellan was not an aggressive general. But he said McClellan was a good organizer who could build the defeated army into a strong force.
General Robert E. Lee, however, would not wait while McClellan rebuilt the army. He decided to carry the war to the North.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles. Our series can be found online with transcripts, podcasts, and historical images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow our weekly programs on Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.